Accession number 30085, Reel 3.
This is Nicholas Gibbs, Reel 3.
Anyway, having visited Carla Vance, go back to my little old lady. And she then starts to tell me through the interpreter where to go in the evenings to see the troops, the very young conscripted troops, where they go with their girlfriends for their last meal before they go off to battle. And what normally happened was that they are come straight out of school, these children or youths aged 16, 17. They have 2 weeks military training and they're shipped off to battle, troop trains. Although I was told where the troop train went from, they wouldn't, there was too much, they wouldn't allow me anywhere near it. But we would used to go to cafes and restaurants, and the restaurants were incredibly cheap. Oh, they were fantastic, and very good food too. Typically European sort of steak and chips, Wiener Schnitzel, and all the little bits and pieces you have in an Eastern European.
No shortages?
No shortages at all. There'll be street sellers who would sell onions, potatoes. I do remember when I was painting, I used to paint from a lot of photographs. I had a few sketches, but mainly photographs, because I would take the photographs, I would walk around my subject, and I'd look for the best angle that I wanted. From there, I would then go to, and there was only one shop in Zagreb that would do instant development, and I would get it back within 6 hours. And I'd paint from the photographs. I would go through and see which ones I liked. I'd taken out with me 20 prepared canvases, and I'd taken a set of stretchers, so the paintings were all exactly the same size. And so I would put the canvas back on the stretcher with drawing pins and paint on that. And once I'd finished the painting, I'd take it off the stretcher and put a new one on. And I'd use my easel, a sort of radiator, which I'd just prop up against the wall and get a chair very close by and a little table with all my paints all over. And my paints, I had to just put in a plastic bag.
And you bought those from the UK?
And I bought those in the UK. Mm. What I didn't bring with me was any solvent to clean the brushes. That was a problem, because turpentine was absolute fortune. Yeah, it was, for a little bottle, it was around about the equivalent of £20. So I asked to go for a decorator shop. There's no such thing. So I said, well, how do you wash your brushes when decorators paint? And they said, oh, petrol. So I was directed to a butcher, and they sold petrol in wine bottles. And the stench, well, I'm not sure it was petrol, it was some sort of solvent. My God, did it stink. So I kept it outside of the window. And my brushes I put outside as well on the veranda, because the smell was unbelievable. Probably highly, highly toxic. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, that's how I wash my brushes. And then, what else there? In the evenings, the people in Zagreb had a habit of walking. It was this very old-fashioned European way of doing things, and I think they did it in England as well, in Victorian times and Edwardian times, is after or before meal, you go out for a walk and you would stroll. And all the people in Zagreb would stroll in the evenings. And so we would stroll up the Ilica to the main square, and everybody was sitting in the cafes. Hundreds and hundreds of soldiers. Oh, one thing I've forgotten, I do remember one night, Friday nights, when I was that time in Zagreb, it was still a ragtag army, but it was by this time, and I learned after, I was being trained surreptitiously by the Americans. And the soldiers used to get drunk, and I remember one day walking along, not that far from the UNHQ, not far from the hospital. And suddenly a soldier stepped out of the cafe with a revolver in the air two hands, firing it into the air. Bang, 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 bang. And Friday night was like battle zone, because you could hear gunfire everywhere throughout the city. And I remember going to a party, and it was quite hot, and I was told to stand back from the windows because of what was going on, and they fire indiscriminately everywhere. And you could see the traces going up as well. It was surreal sitting in this dinner party and seeing the traces go up everywhere and hearing this gunfire. And one of the guests said, oh, she'd just missed death because one of the bullets had come in and it had ricocheted all around the room. But I remember that very well. Never went on a tram, mainly because I was didn't want to grapple with the language, and especially when the trams were all totally full, you didn't want to actually start haggling about prices. So I'd walk everywhere, and I actually walked up into the hills above Zagreb to go and see what was around. But I think there was, I got lost. I got lost, and I had to ask a woodman the way back about what he thought of me. God only knows. Where else had I been? The cathedral. I went round all the churches, the cathedrals. St. Mark's, which is this fabulous building on one of the old town, in part of the old town, which is this wonderful church with a designed roof. It's got the coat of arms of, I think, old Zagreb on it. And fabulous murals inside, frescoes. And the cathedral was fantastic. Wonderful tombs. And I went round the cemetery. The cemetery was bizarre because it was full of the old communists who were all buried there. This whacking great arcade that went round the front of it. And I remember being asked by an old... Oh, that's right, I came across a funeral, but it was a funeral of a famous sportsman who'd been killed on the battlefield. And I came across it, and there were 5,000-6,000 people there, all on the grave in the cemetery. And I remember being asked by an old lady who was pointing at my canvas, and obviously she was saying, what was I doing there with the canvas? And another funeral went by. They had rather like a New Orleans band. They had the coffin on a hearse, on a bier, and yet they had an orchestra that went ahead of it. And that was very sort of Italian. But I was fascinated to watch that. Strange enough, I was watching the film Fortunes of War, the television series. And in it, I thought, I recognise that. And in it, they have filmed part of Fortunes of War in the cemetery at Zagreb. It's where Sasha, who is one of the Jewish... who's been runner? He's been his family have been arrested, and he's escaped. And he suddenly appears in front of Guy and Harriet Pringle, dishevelled, and it's there in the arcade. And I suddenly thought, right, I know that arcade. But in the arcade, these wonderful actual tombs and carvings, and also metal plaques, but all in relief, which are fantastic. What else did I do out there? Went to CSAC, and CSAC I did exactly the same as I did in Karlovac. And again, all these ruins. But I got through CSAC very easily, in fact. There was nobody to stop me, and there were, in fact, hardly any people there at all.
The ruins in CSAC, did you take many photos of these for your war art?
I took several. It was strange, actually. In the CSAC, I was so interested in the ruins, I forgot about my camera. I was savouring the ruins, and I think one of, no, I don't have it on the wall here, but I did. There's one ruin where the house had a direct hit, and the shell had come through one side of the house, and it had blown the back out of the house completely, and the back was all over the road, right way across the road, with mattresses, and the floor had collapsed, and the floor had been a sort of concrete block, and it just collapsed like a mattress, and it was bent like a mattress. with everything still in it, the washing machines and everything. They're all still there. I remember being fascinated by this.
And would you have recorded that in any way?
I photographed that, and I painted a picture of that.
And when you photographed these ruins and places, would you also have made sketches or notes to remind you of different features, or say the colour if you were worried about the accuracy of the colour?
Hopefully the camera would give me the colour. The only notes I made were what was beside the ruins. I didn't want to make too many sketches, because if I was caught with any of these, I would have thought I would be arrested as a spy, which I was quite concerned about, that they would think I was a spy. And when I was there, the ammunition dump blew up in Zagreb. And when I painted in my room, I would listen to BBC World Service, and I'd hear the same programme over and over. I'd heard one programme in 2 days 5 times, and listen to the news. And strange enough, that particular day I didn't hear any of the news, but the sky was getting very grey, and there was it looked like a thunderstorm appeared. And I had the journey I'd been there in Zagreb before, a thunderstorm had come through the valley, and it was extraordinary because it had come right through like a cloud, like a sea mist drifting across the valley. One minute you could see right across the valley, and the next minute you were enveloped in this whacking great cloud with huge claps of thunder and lightning coming straight through, which lasted 5 minutes, and then it was gone again. And so I thought I was going to see that again. And about 3 o'clock the interpreter came down, and I was hearing these claps of thunder. And she said, "You ought to go up to the end of the tower." I said, "But why?" And she said, "Because the ammunition is blowing up at the moment. Can't you hear all the sound?" And I looked out the window, and you could see in the distance smoke rising, but you could also see like oil drums going up into the sky and bursting. And and then the news that evening, one was told the ammunition had dump had blown up, 6 people had been killed. But I tried later to get near, and there were lots of blockades all the way around. But I flew out when I left, and we circled over the ammunition dump. And it was an extraordinary sight, because there were these sort of oblong black patches in the ground with what looked like matchsticks sticking out, which obviously were the... But about 10 huts had gone up. And I thought, I'm immediately going to be accused of being a spy. And maybe I've done it, because they were arresting people who they thought might have done it. But I think it was an internal where somebody had made a mistake and lit a match.
Mm-hmm. How unusual would you have been as a so-called tourist in a war zone? Were there other tourists about? Were there other people?
I did see sometimes relief vehicles going through with British number plates. They were trucks.
But these were relief, you know, presumably acknowledged relief people. They weren't. You were informal, weren't you? You'd just gone as a tourist, presumably. So, you know, you must have stood out as someone pretty unusual.
No, actually, well, they thought that I was Croat, because when I did a lot of exploring around the town, Croats would come up and ask me questions, whether the way to this or what the time was. And because I have a longish face, I fitted in, because lots of the Croats have long faces, you see. And I was surprised that I was taken for a Croat. So, yes, I fitted in quite happily, and I was quite pleased with that. I was there for Easter, and so I thought, a Catholic country, go to church. So I went, and they had these wonderful services, which were just like Italy. I remember when I was a child, age 13, I went to go and stay with a friend in Italy whose mother was Italian for 3 weeks, and we were there in Easter. And I remember in Positano going, standing in the church, and I'm not Catholic, but listening to all the Catholic songs. And they all gave us, I was, by all the language teachers, I was given coloured eggs, because they give each other painted eggs. And the whole place is sort of deserted on Easter Day. But I did a lot of walking, a lot of blisters. And then I came back. I went back to America.
And returning, was this because you'd run out of money?
No, I'd had my month there, and I was staying for a month. I paid the little old lady rent. And I grew very fond of her, actually. And I remember, yes, going to Carlovats, and I missed my train coming back from Carlovats a third time. And it was pouring with rain. And I remember thinking, what am I doing here? And I remember standing in the doorway like a tramp. And my ski jacket had a hood, and I was wearing my hood, and the water was dripping down my forehead, over my nose and off my nose, and I was standing there, and I was very, very cold. My jeans were soaking wet. Missed my train, and I got back 9 o'clock at night, and the little old lady was beside herself. Where have you been? Where have you been? And she made me undress, and she put all the clothes in front of the fire. But that was extraordinary time, and I think that's all I remember. I'll probably come back to things, little things I remember, because I've now got a third trip coming up as well.
Yes, right. So you came back then, and you went back to America. You say
went back to America,
mm-hmm.
and went back to Philadelphia.
And then did you sort of regroup and finish all your paintings which had come out of that trip?
At the same time, I was semi-living up in Herefordshire as well. I had all my furniture there, and I had all my paintings. And I organised an exhibition. I wanted an exhibition. And so I framed all my own stuff, because I was damned if I was going to get somebody else to frame it. And I had 50 paintings.
And were these paintings you'd painted in Croatia and brought back, or did you paint them
both? There was ones I had done on my prepared canvases and came back, and then others I was halfway through. And I knew by last week I only had so much time, so I let the paint dry. I didn't dare paint the last two or three days because it would be too wet, and I couldn't have rolled the stuff up. When I did roll the stuff up and take it out, they thought I was smuggling paintings out, and they made me unwrap all the paintings. I was slightly concerned about that, just in case they thought, right, propaganda will take that. So anyway, I got out with the paintings. I also remember, yes, I remember, for some unknown reason, I couldn't quite work out, they took all our bags out onto the tarmac in the aircraft. And then they called us all back out onto the tarmac. And I thought, right, we're going to be shot immediately. And they made us identify our personal luggage before they put it into the hold, possibly because they'd be warned there would be a bomb or something. But I do remember there were a lot of UN there at the time. So we identified, we touched our bags, and as we touched them, the baggage handlers hauled them out. Flew back England and then back to America, but I only spent a couple of weeks in America and came back to England. Exhibition.
Where was this, the exhibition?
I rented a friend's, I took a friend's house, and what had happened was that the friend's house was in Belgravia, and the Grosvenor estate were renovating the houses either side and had damaged the central house. So it obviously meant the central house had to be redone. So this particular friend had taken everything out, and in fact it was Izzy Blair, who's just committed suicide a couple of weeks ago. And she had put Philip Tracy upstairs and she put Alexander McQueen downstairs. And I displaced Alexander McQueen for a week. And it was before he'd even actually got onto the radar of fashion. He was still he wasn't even up and coming. Nobody had heard of him. And so I could put nails in any wall I wanted, so I could hang the paintings wherever I wanted. And the place looked like a bombed out house. and had been semi-condemned, and we were told it was unsafe. And yet I had the exhibition there. So sent out, went and bought the wine. I had a friend who was able to get wine cheap. It wasn't cheap wine, but and sent out invitations. I remember my hands were numb writing invitations out, and sent them all out and had the exhibition.
How did it go?
The wall paintings didn't sell very well. The other paintings did, but wall paintings don't sit on people's drawing walls that well. I got a lot of good publicity for the wall paintings, but they don't sell, and they are rarely for institutions. They are for banks. They are for museums. They are collector's items, but they're not pretty things. They're not flowers like most people or countryside. So, but I sold 20 altogether out of, what did I had about 70 altogether paintings, which was everything, including the wall stuff. I'd framed all my own stuff, and I don't know how to mitre, so all the frames are over in a difficulty. I had to hide the mitre, but I'd spent weeks sawing up these bloody pieces of wood. As you can see, the frames there, part of them. I refused to throw them away, so I've kept most of them. So, exhibition, got publicity.
What did they write about your war art? Did it create a lot of interest?
Not really. I won't be rude about a particular person, which I think you and I know about, who actually refused to come. But anyway, because I was not an official war artist. So anyway...
This was someone from the museum, I think, wasn't it?
Anyway, so had the exhibition. Then by this time, my friends in Herefordshire were getting divorced, which was an eye-opener to me, because I thought they would be there forever. And they were sons there. They bought this wonderful farm, and they were very they were organic, and they wanted to do everything organic. And they were doing extremely well, in fact. And suddenly it was announced they were separating. I remember my eyes opening. So things were having to be sold. So by this time, I had ended my relationship in America. And so I was at a loose end where to go, because I'd sold my flat in London. And although I had money in the bank, what was I going to do next? So I had another friend who offered me a place in Devon. So I spent a year, 9-10 months painting down there, exploring churches, painting churches. And I got into a system where I would go out and explore in the mornings, and I'd come back in the evenings, or come back in the afternoon at lunch. I'd have lunch, and I'd paint. And I'd paint through until probably 8 o'clock in the evening. And I'd be working on 20-25 canvases at a time. And I was painting for another exhibition. So that ended, but it ended quite conveniently, because by that time I had become engaged to be married. But before I became engaged, I'd already made arrangements to go back out to Croatia.
What was taking you back to Croatia? This is your third visit.
This is my third visit.
Your second sort of working visit.
Yes. Well, I'd made friends, and therefore now everybody who had dealt with me beforehand had become personal friends. And they said, you must come back.
So but did the art draw you? Did you want, you know, was it an unfinished business?
Well, I wanted to go on painting more and more and more. And Kraina had just happened by this time.
Yes, what had happened in Kraina?
Kraina is where the Croats had decided, before any peace deals were going to be made, that they were going to snatch back their area, which the Serbs had taken and made into a semi-autonomous state. So the Croats had gone in with heavy guns, and by this time they were a strong army, because they'd been trained by the Americans. And they'd gone wham, straight in, and a huge amount of refugees have been created, and I think 200,000 had exited. And I think atrocities were occurring all over the place. There was a BBC photographer.
So these would have been Serb refugees.
Maybe Serb refugees. And what was his name? Franjo, who was the leader?
Tudjman.
Mm. Had said publicly, oh, all Serbs are welcome here as long as they recognise the Croat state. Obviously, they weren't going to recognise the Croat state and they weren't going to stay there. So. But what I do remember seeing on television, because that, I suppose, was a thing I must get out there. And I remember seeing on television the Croats flying their flag in, I think it was the Citadel, the castle, or the Citadel at Knin. I remember thinking how incredibly evocative that particular picture was. When I mentioned it to the Croats later, they scoffed at it, saying, "Ah, it's just propaganda." But the actual image of it was fantastic, and I think the image of flags flying in triumph is always evocative. And I took actually after my third visit, I took a lot of photographs of the Croat flag flying outside various offices because I was taken by that victorious flag. And see, a BBC journalist was shot out there, and I was told by the UN that he had seen an atrocity and was taking photographs of it, and the perpetrators of the atrocity had decided to cover up the crime and they had shot the guy dead. And my third time engaged.
Responsibilities, Nicholas.
They were, but not totally, because there was the idea that I suppose I was a war artist, and unusual. And I was engaged to the daughter of an Italian diplomat. Anyway, went out, I booked a bus. I thought I'd try a bus this time. Didn't know what I'd let myself in for. Left Victoria, Eurolines, left Victoria. By the time we got to Austria, I had a very numb bottom, and by the time I got to Zagreb I was screaming because I wanted to get out, being enclosed in this space for so long. And I got there, we got there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and I was met by my friends, taken back, given lots of coffee, slept. Anyway, by this time Zagreb to me was almost second home. I knew my way around very, very well. What I do remember is that was outside the railway station. Something had changed. I wasn't sure what it was. They'd chopped all the trees down in the station square, and they'd replanted them. But they chopped them all down, so it had a totally different look. It had this Mediterranean look originally, I remember, and then suddenly it had this bare area. I think the opera house was not far from that, and the museums, which actually didn't have anything in it. They'd all been closed up because of any battles that might have ensued. There was an old-fashioned steam engine, actually, as a museum piece outside the railway station. So, went back to the usual place.
To your old lady?
To my old lady, who welcomed me with open arms.
What is her name? We ought to give her a name.
I have to look that up.
Oh, well,
I will have to.
Yes, that's okay. I can write that later. Mm. What did you call her?
Her name. I can't remember
her name.
I should have checked that before we started talking.
That's okay.
Because she sent me a congratulations for getting engaged thing. Oh, getting married rather. And I went back there. Now, by this time, as I said, Crimea had started, and I wanted to get into the Crimea enclave. And so, by chance, I was going around, and bizarrely, by this time, there were tourist offices open all over Zagreb. Zagreb had been sort of renovated. The shops had changed. The currency had changed. It became kuna.
End of Reel 3, Nicholas Gibbs.